This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. Where do your kids go to school? For an estimated 1.5 million American families, the answer is right at home. And while the quality of a homeschooled education depends on what's happening inside the household, what's happening outside also makes a big difference.
Hi, my name is Izzy, and I'm from Michigan. We homeschool all of our children. We are originally from Ohio, and that's part of the reason why we moved to Michigan, because of the lax in homeschool laws.
Now, the rules that govern homeschoolers vary from state to state. In some places, all you have to do is keep your kid home from school. Nothing else is required. Other states require yearly check-ins or lesson plans. How should homeschooling be regulated? Should it be regulated at all? Well, late last year, we asked you to pitch us shows that you wanted to hear on 1A. The questions you wanted to have answered. You pitched the ideas, you voted, we tallied them all up. And all this month, we'll be bringing you shows based on your top five listener picks. A 1A listener, Jerusha Laughlin, wanted to know about homeschooling and regulation, and she's the reason we're spending this hour on this national debate. And she joins me now from KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. Jerusha, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And thank you for submitting this idea to 1A, because it really got us going. And I think it's going to get everybody going listening to us. So thanks for participating.
Thank you for having me.
Well, why did you submit the topic of how homeschooling should be regulated to us here at the show? What got you going on this issue?
Well, I was homeschooled for 10 years in Michigan. So I have that experience. And then I went on to homeschool my own children for 6 years in Kansas. And I think as the first wave of kids who were pulled out of school and homeschooled through the 80s and 90s, we're now coming of age. We're now in our 30s and 40s. We're able to better reflect on our experiences, pick apart the good and the bad. And some of us are making educational choices for our children.
Hmm. Well, what was your experience like being a homeschooled child before you became a homeschooling mom?
Right. It was a mixed bag. I had gone to public school for kindergarten and first grade. And after that, my parents pulled me out and said, we're going to keep you at home. For the first 4 years, my parents cobbled together curriculum, because homeschooling was so new, we were some of the first people doing it, and it was technically illegal. So we were very isolated. My parents were afraid that somebody would find out we were homeschooled and take us away, that they would be arrested, because we did know of people that were arrested for homeschooling back then. So there was this strange fear of the state, and also conviction that this was the best thing for us. And then later on, as one of your voicemails there, Michigan created very lax homeschool laws later on. So after that, there was no pressure. There was no required testing or anything like that. It was up to each individual parent to decide for themselves. So we looked like the poster family for homeschooling. We had a reputation in the community. We read well. We showed well. Participated in events, but it was covering a psychological and physical abuse within the home that was never, and some educational neglect that I didn't realize what it was until I grew up and started trying to train my own children and realized there were big gaps.
We have to talk about those issues a lot more, and we will this hour. I just have a very simple question for you. I mean, do you remember liking it when you think back to being schooled at home and not going to recess, not playing foursquare with the other kids in the schoolyard or what have you? Do you remember liking this life that your parents constructed for you?
I tried to like it. I think I wasn't consulted. It wasn't would you like to go to school or would you like to be at home? It was, this is what we think is God is calling our family to. So I tried to make it seem like an improvement. So I tried to excel at it and show well. And yeah, I think it's hard to say. I did miss aspects of it. I certainly miss tests. I miss being compared to my peers. I miss competing, being all alone, teaching myself in many ways, especially later when their mom was focused on teaching the younger children to read. So often homeschool was, I got a book by myself and sat at the table and taught myself I wanted to learn.
You grew up and had kids of your own and decided to homeschool them as well.
I did.
And so you say it was a mixed bag. There were things you missed, and you also mentioned other issues in your family that were much more drastic than the national
Correct.
Debate over homeschooling. But why did you turn around and decide that this was best for your kids in an era when it's not illegal and you don't have to worry about them being taken away?
Why did I choose to homeschool?
Or? Yes.
Okay. I think it was at that point a lot of family and social pressure because of the training I had experienced. And I hesitate to use the word brainwashing, but the curriculum that my parents ended up using for about 10 years, I look back now and say it was a cult. It was largely a lot of our day was spent studying the particular worldview of one cult leader in Illinois. And so all of our subjects were bent to fit that worldview. And we studied a lot of sermons. We were afraid of science. My parents didn't believe that girls needed to learn higher math because if we were cut out to be homemakers, we wouldn't be needing that anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. So
was this a healthy environment?
It was not.
No.
No. But I didn't realize that until I'd been out for, you know, 5 or 10 years.
But you've decided to homeschool your own kids, and that makes me very curious.
Right?
About
well, I did for 6 years.
And then they went to public school.
Yes. Eventually, okay. As I started to, because it made me start asking questions. At first, I was afraid of public schools because I had been so conditioned to believe that they would try to teach me things that God didn't want me to know, for example, or that the peer pressure would cause me to use drugs or have sex before I wanted to. Or there were so many things put around public school as this dangerous place. Mm. So that really wasn't an option. And I knew my parents would be terribly disappointed if I put my kids in public school because they had raised me to believe that this was my calling as a mother to invest in educating my own children. So I think that was a lot of the motivation at the beginning. And then as I started to get more serious and realized I have to come up with a curriculum, I have to choose how to teach my kids math. How am I going to teach? You know, I taught them how to read, but that was because I had some experience teaching younger siblings, and I used a lot of the curriculum my mom had kind of come up with over the years. So we were just kind of lucky that I had enough background to be able to launch them into reading. And it wasn't too long before I started to realize that I wasn't really up to the task of being responsible for everything that went into their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I started reading a lot, and that's kind of what convinced me that maybe school wasn't as dangerous as I thought it was.
And your experience, you towed up to the word brainwashing, even if you didn't quite use it.
Yeah,
and the experience of the teaching of one particular religious cult leader. I want to read for you some comments that we got from listeners, and we're getting a lot of them, Jerusha. Shannon tweeted, "Here's one suggestion for homeschooling. Ban it outright. There might be some legitimate reasons for homeschooling, but most of it is done to brainwash kids with religion or politics or bigotry." And here's another tweet we got from Church of Baseball. "Religious extremism is a plague on our society, and homeschoolers are largely fundamentalists who want to keep their kids out of society and in their tiny warped bubbles." What do you think about this conception of homeschooling, Jerusha,
that it's
isolationist and it's for parents who want to sequester their kids?
Well, I think there are many different kinds of homeschooling, and it's a mistake to throw it all in one bag. But I will say that education is not every homeschool parent's priority.
Mm-hmm. In other words, indoctrination is.
It could be.
Or
they
sequestration.
They might be trying to create a certain kind of family or, yeah, they might be... And one reason I think regulation would be useful for homeschooling, there's too much cover for parents that have other intentions that are using the lack of regulation to conceal abuse or neglect.
Now, what regulations are there around homeschooling in your home state of Kansas?
In Kansas, we have no rules.
No
rules. We don't even count how many kids are being homeschooled in Kansas. The state has no idea. We just tell the state we're going to homeschool, and we never hear anything again. And that's partly what terrified me as I started homeschooling my kids. For 6 years, nobody ever contacted me. No one ever checked to see if I had a curriculum, if my kids were being schooled, if I was at home with them. Kids could be unsupervised, left teaching themselves. They could be working for the family business. Nobody would ever check.
All the kids have to do is not show up. Well, we're going to be talking a lot more about what the level of regulation for homeschooling should be, whether there should be any at all. The rules differ greatly from state to state, and we're going to be talking about that as well. Before we get there, Jerusha, what rules do you think homeschoolers should have to follow?
I think maintaining some records, having to turn in some kind of proof that there is education going on. I think background checks for parents would be a great idea, so that parents who have been investigated for abuse in the past wouldn't just be able to avoid future reports by keeping their kids at home. I think making sure that parents are qualified in the sense of perhaps having had to finish high school or at least have a GED, requiring physicals to make sure the kids aren't being medically neglected, have the same rules. You know, when I put my kids in school, they had to have a physical, have a doctor sign mm-hmm. off. So something like that for the same for homeschooled kids would be a great idea.
There are a lot of things that we do for children that aren't necessarily a school function, but we do it because kids go to school. It's a place to collect them. So
correct.
We insist that children are vaccinated, which, of course, helps the health of all the kids. But kids come to school and we can reach them there and we can reach parents there. And it sounds like
right.
you're saying that many of these things, apart from issues of potential abuse, apart from curriculum, may also be at stake here. We're going to talk about these issues after a short break. Do parents have the right to homeschool their kids without any government intervention at all? I'm speaking with Jerusha Laughlin. She submitted a pitch about homeschooling regulations that you picked as one of the shows that you want to hear. So here it is, your pick on 1A. We're doing it all this year. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking to Jerusha Laughlin, a parent in Wichita, Kansas. She pitched us a show on homeschooling and regulation that you picked as one of the top five shows that you wanted to hear in this new year. We'll be airing other picks all this month. Well, Kathy in Colorado left us a message about her daughter who lives in Fairbanks, Alaska, and homeschools her four children.
Interestingly, in the state of Alaska, it's homeschooling is part of the public school system. So she has a budget for each child. They're beautiful piano players. They've learned how to skate ski. They've learned how to swim and knit and do all kinds of things within the confines of the homeschool situation.
One of the things we're going to explore is how regulation of homeschooling varies greatly from state to state, because we got this note from Brooke, who says, I was homeschooled from 7 to 17 in Texas, a state in which the only requirement for homeschool curriculum is that it's written down. The curriculum that my parents used was written by a sexual predator, and its purpose was to groom victims. They also refused to purchase an answer key, so I never knew if my work was correct. Different views on homeschooling and different rules and regulations governing it across this country. We'd love to hear from you as well. Share what you know about homeschooling laws and regulations. You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A, our email address, 1A@WAMU.org. Jerusha is here and joining the conversation now from Michigan Public Radio in Ann Arbor is Samantha Field. She's policy advocate for the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. Welcome to 1A.
It's nice to be here.
Great to have you. Also with us is Brian Ray, president of the National Home Education Research Institute. Brian, welcome to you as well.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good to be here.
Samantha, can you walk us through how homeschooling laws vary from state to state, laws or regulations? How widely does it vary across borders?
So at the Coalition for Responsible Home Education, we have a few different categories. We refer to states as either having no notice, notice-only assessments with exceptions, moderate assessments, and thorough assessments. More than half of states have either no notice or notice-only, and sometimes the notice-only, you have to notify for your individual children that you're intending to homeschool, but sometimes in some states you can just notify that you're intending to homeschool your entire family, and then you don't have to name the individual children who are going to be homeschooled. Only four states have assessments that are actually involve some sort of oversight or accountability. The rest of them, you're required to maintain some records. For example, I was homeschooled in Florida, and while we had to maintain records, we never had to provide those records to anyone or have anyone look at them.
What are the four states where assessments are required?
So New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and Rhode Island, and Vermont.
All in the Northwest there.
Yeah, well, Northeast, yeah.
I just said Northwest. Jerusha describes a childhood where she was homeschooled, where they lived in fear of the kids being taken away because it was illegal. That's no longer the case. When and how did homeschooling become legal in the United States? And then when did it really take off?
So it depends on each state. Each state has its own history of how they moved from homeschooling falling under truancy laws to homeschooling becoming legal. And they all pursued a variety of paths towards the legalization of homeschooling. An organization was founded by Michael Ferris in about the 1980s called the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And their primary mission at first was to create an environment where homeschooling was legal in every state. And they have succeeded at that.
So it's legal all across the country. And in about half of states, you said, essentially completely unregulated. Jerusha lives in a state where no notice is required. Simply the kids just don't show up at public school or any other place.
Well, we notified the state at the beginning.
You notified.
Like, there is no other contact after that.
Yeah, only 11 states have no notice.
Go ahead, Samantha.
Yeah, only 11 states have no notice.
No notice
at all.
11 states. Brian, what do you think is the appropriate level of regulation for homeschooling?
The real issue is, what is homeschooling? And it's private education like Lutheran schools and independent secular schools and Catholic schools. It's a form of private education. And the question is, should the government be controlling private education? And it depends on your political philosophy, Todd. You know, there are people who are classical liberals and people who come from a Judeo-Christian worldview who'd say, hey, if the education is not taking government funds, not taking tax dollars, it's not controlled by the state, then it should not be controlled by the state. Mm-hmm. And that's generally where I would fall. And it is a form of private education. We also have empirical evidence, which is very interesting, that kind of fits out philosophy, because we see that all across the nation, when we've done research on, you know, grouping the states, like Samantha mentioned, with low state control, medium state control, high state control, we see not even a correlation between the degree of state control and children's academic achievement, no correlation between the level of state control and SAT scores going on to college, no correlation between degree of state control of private education in the form of homeschooling and levels of abuse. So it's kind of interesting that is what the empirical evidence tells us so far. See, when you look at control of education in a free nation, we have to be really, really careful.
What about levels of regulation, though, that just include checking in or assessment or having a physical? I think that most people would look at that and say, that's not control. That's not control. That's a level of oversight.
I think it is control. Whenever you have a government law, Todd, that's control. We have to ask ourselves a question. Let's step back just a second here. When people have babies, the government does not come in and have a law that says we now have to check on you. Let's be really fundamental and really blunt here. So when you start with that question, you're assuming that the state or the civil government has prior authority over a child's life. And we don't have that in American history. We don't have that in American law. So, if we're going to start talking about the control, government control, you call it regulation, but it's government control of private homeschooling education, we have to start talking about government controlling or making new laws as soon as a child is born. We have to talk about summer vacation that's 3 months long for private school students, for public school students. We have to start talking about controls of what the government should be doing in that family
and the debate,
in terms of their privacy.
The debate over government involvement in our individual lives is an American tradition in this country, and it sounds like it continues in the debate over homeschooling. I want to get listeners in on this. We got this call from Jacqueline. Listen.
Hey guys, this is Jacqueline from St. Louis, Missouri. I was homeschooled for a few years by a mother who immigrated here from Poland. Even with English as her second language, I never felt like I was missing out on anything. When I returned back to the public school system in eighth grade, I was actually ahead of my peers in English and in math, something that I had struggled with before I started being homeschooled.
We got this note from Ray in Taylor, South Carolina, who says, as a parent of homeschooled graduates, our family homeschooled in both highly regulated states and loosely regulated states. Regulation has little impact on the education of the child, but a tremendous impact on the financial burden and administrative burden on the parents. And Brian, you say that your research agrees with that, that states that have higher regulation have no better academic performance, no lower incidence of abuse or neglect. Is that a good summation of your research?
That is exactly what we've found so far. And I think this caller brings up an excellent point. Whenever the government starts laying more controls in the form of laws and regulations on education or families, it acts as a barrier, Todd, to the already disenfranchised. When we look at fragile communities, people of lower income, people of lower formal education level, as soon as you start putting up government controls, you are discriminating against them and you're reducing the opportunity for them to make choices in the education of their children. I'm actually in the process of doing a research project on this very topic right now. We already have a little bit of research that shows more government controls is a barrier to minorities, lower income people, and so forth. So whenever you start talking about controls of families, controls of education, you got to think about the potential unintended consequences.
Samantha, let me get your take on this, because I know you steep yourself in homeschooling policy as well.
Yes.
Any regulation is a form of control, and it's just not appropriate here.
So I would actually like to challenge many of Brian's statements. So Brian came to the conclusion that there's no correlation between oversight and academic achievement, and he's basing that on the studies that he's done. I am familiar with the studies that he's done, and there are methodological problems with his studies, notably that they rely on self-selected samples. So the only people who contributed to the studies that he's talking about were over 90% white, were mostly wealthy, were mostly people who were college-educated parents, were mostly people who the father worked and the mother stayed at home, and were mostly from students who were in elementary and middle school and did not have a similar rate of return from people who were in high school. His response rate was abysmally low. And so the only thing that his studies can actually tell us about academic achievement for homeschooling is that rich, well-educated parents are capable of educating their kids and creating some academic achievement. And that's something that we already know. And when you try to make this statement that there's no correlation between oversight and achievement based on his studies, you can't do that, because the only people who responded to his survey were people who wanted their children's scores to be known.
Not to be left alone, in other words.
Yes. So like the people who are responding are the people who are having their students tested, the people who are confident that their students' scores will be positive and show success. And in fact, only like almost a quarter of his respondents already knew the scores of their children when they decided to send them to Brian.
OK, well, methodology is a debate that the experts have to have among themselves. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But Brian,
yeah.
Self-selection bias is a problem that every researcher across the world has to watch out for. And maybe you're watching out for it. Brian, tell me a little bit about how your research is funded. I tend to ask a lot of people in your position who come on the show who funds their research. It's important.
Yeah. Well, since she made a claim, we don't want to bore listeners with an hour of methodology, but I will say this. What she said is not exactly clearly true, but also in the most recent review of research that I did of many authors, many researchers, 11 of the 14 studies, that's 78% of them, found that home-educated children do significantly better academically. Just a little, you know, take it off of
but
Brian.
But what you're admitting is that all
me,
of those
excuse
studies.
Me, okay. Excuse me, Samantha. We don't want to get into the methodology. So now I'm going to answer his question. Who funds the research? It's a nonprofit organization, Todd, so many donations come in from here and there. Right now, I'm doing a research project that's funded by the Center for Educational Opportunity based out of Washington, D.C. So research grant here, research grant there, nonprofit donations.
Brian,
basically, that's it. And I've also had a federal government grant once.
And you already know this, but I want listeners to be aware, in the spirit of full disclosure, you have in some circles been criticized as being essentially ideologically driven, that you're for homeschooling, you're against regulation, that you're the only employee at your NHERI, and that your research tends to be fit to purpose. I want you to respond to that because it's in the press a lot.
Sure. Yeah, let's do that. I would say this. Everybody is criticized for their research methodology. You know, when we have a professor at the University of Wisconsin who's a neo-Marxist and does a report on homeschooling, it's kind of interesting that almost nobody says, hey, look, he works at a state university where his income is based on tax-funded public schooling. It's kind of interesting nobody says that, but they will do that with me. So I guess the proof is in the pudding. I have many research reports that are published in peer-reviewed journals, and people can go look at it and decide for themselves, regardless of what my ideological background, whether it's pagan, atheist, metaphysical, naturalist, Christian, mm-hmm. classical liberal. So let's just leave it at that. People can go look at my peer-reviewed research.
Jerusha Laughlin, I'm glad you're still here listening in, because the policy debates rage, and you're here not only because you pitched the story, but you're the real-life person who is homeschooled and also homeschooled your own children. Forget about methodological fights. This argument over regulation versus non-regulation, benefit for kids versus non-benefit for kids, you've already said that you're in favor of some regulation. How does this debate, listening in on it, strike you?
Well, I think as Samantha suggested, Brian's data is limited to children who were tested. I never took an SAT test. I was never assessed. My progress was never assessed. Children who are being isolated, neglected, abused, or uneducated aren't going to show up on any of his data.
Because you were never assessed in the first place. You might be one of those people who wouldn't show up in Brian's study.
Right. And I've listened to so many stories from now adults in their 30s and 40s who still struggle with health issues and psychological trauma that was caused or compounded by their homeschool experience, and not to mention the educational neglect. I have one quote I pulled out last night just out of a collection. My friend Matt was in his 30s when he told me, I was pulled out of school in the sixth grade. I never did any formal schooling past that beyond my own studying and reading. No one was checking up on us. And I think that's the bigger picture, that there are children who deserve to learn. I believe all children deserve to learn, whether or not their parents are qualified to teach. And I think we're able to lose them in the cracks a little too easily when there's no oversight.
Samantha, you're in the policy world now, but you also have experience being homeschooled. Can you talk about it a little bit?
I was withdrawn from the Department of Defense schools when I was in kindergarten and homeschooled all the way up through graduation, although I put scare quotes around graduation because in high school I did not in reality achieve more than a ninth grade education.
Same here.
And I would tend to describe my elementary school experience in glowing praise. My mother was very involved. I loved being homeschooled. I was one of those kids that was a little bit bored in school. So being able to learn at my own pace, being able to study the subjects I was really interested in, to have all of the time available to me to formally study logic, to study Latin and Greek, all of the things that my mother made available to me when I was in elementary school, was truly excellent, and I legitimately loved it, loved every single second of it. However, when we hit middle school, we started struggling quite a bit. And one of the things that happened is that my mother, who is very smart and very good at math, she does not know how to explain math to another person. She was never given any kind of training or resources or tools in how to teach math to someone who might understand it in a different way from her.
We're going to talk more about academic achievement. We're going to talk more about socialization. We got this note from Emily. We homeschool our children in the District of Columbia, where public schools are notoriously abysmal. Why should my ability to homeschool be called into jeopardy through assessments when it would be perfectly legal to send my child to a dangerous and failing local school? Well, we're going to talk more about that. We're going to talk about what happens when a homeschool kid goes missing. It all goes to the question of law and regulation. Stick with us on 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. More on homeschooling after this break. ¶¶ Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We'll continue in just a moment, but I have a quick heads up about this month's meeting of the 1A Movie Club. Next week, we're going to be talking about the latest film adaptation of Little Women. Well, if you've seen the movie, we want to hear from you. How many stars do you give it out of five? Give it your review. Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. We especially want to hear from you if you're a fan of the original story by Louisa May Alcott. Do you think the film did that novel justice? So often they do not. Tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. You can send us an audio file with our app, 1A Vox Pop, and we're going to share some of your stories tomorrow when we do the movie club next week, actually, here on 1A. We're talking about homeschooling rules and regulations across America. Jerusha Laughlin is with me, a homeschooling parent and homeschooled child in Kansas. Brian Ray is here, president of the National Home Education Research Institute. And Samantha Field is with us, policy advocate, Coalition for Responsible Home Education, who is also homeschooled. We got this email from Nathan, who says, I will never forget watching my mother beat my younger dyslexic sister for getting a math problem wrong. That sister is now a walking ghost, strung out on meth with multiple theft charges and warrants. Homeschooling can create an incredible learning environment for the curious and driven mind. It can also mask horrors of abuse, physical, emotional, and sexual. Mm-hmm. Samantha, in 2018, two homeschooled children were discovered buried in their parents' backyard in Georgia. It made national news. One of them hadn't been seen for 4 years. These are the worst cases, of course, but how common are cases like this, that homeschooled children are abused or just disappear off the map?
To be honest, it's impossible to answer that question. Because of the 11 states that require no notice whatsoever, we don't even know how many children are being homeschooled or being kept at home under the technical auspices of homeschooling, but actually aren't being home educated, or states that only require notice, or the other states that you're required to have bookkeeping, but no one's ever required to ever lay eyes on your children to even see if they're still alive.
Brian, we're not going to be interrupting. You're going to get your chance, I promise. Go ahead, Samantha.
So we can't answer that question in an overly confident way. What we do try to do is we maintain a database called Homeschooling's Invisible Children, where with every case that is verifiably like homeschooling was some kind of factor involved, either through double checking with the original investigators or through calling and getting in touch with the families involved. Like our database has found hundreds of cases of extreme child torture, abuse, neglect, malnourishment, educational neglect, medical neglect, rape, children being chained to beds, children being locked in cages, children being chopped up and hidden in freezers and nobody knowing about it for 4 years or more. These cases, we don't know how common they are, but they're not uncommon.
Now, these cases don't mean that homeschooling causes this horrible, horrible abuse.
No, no,
but what it does mean, perhaps, is that the children are, again, sequestered from society, and because they don't go to school and because nobody is required to check in on them, they're able to fall through the cracks and in some cases disappear between them. Jerusha, you mentioned at the top of the show that your homeschooling was also in the context of an abusive household. Mm-hmm. If you would, to the extent that you're comfortable, talk a little bit about how that's relevant to the homeschooling discussion that we're having.
Yeah, well, when I did finally put my children in school, and after my oldest was enrolled in a public school just down the street from us, I had my own mental health crisis. And it made me so grateful that she was in a classroom with teachers, so many adults around her every day, investing in her, making sure that she didn't fall behind. Because when that happened with my mother, we all picked up the slack. We took care of each other. We took care of her. There was nobody else checking up on us or looking after us. And I think the stakes are just too high with a child. A child doesn't get their childhood back. You can fill in gaps. You can try to go back and, you know, therapy and education and you can fill in a lot of holes, but a childhood only happens once. And a child's developing mind and their body, those things become part of their brain, their psyche for their life. Those are the things they're going to carry with them.
Brian, children are defenseless, of course, and we all care about them. And one of the arguments here, your research certainly touches on whether regulation can help prevent abuse and neglect. And I want to hear you talk about that. But it's also the idea that school provides a place where we check in on the common welfare. We check in on the welfare of children for the common benefit of this of us all. Sometimes that's vaccines. Sometimes that's having teachers with a watchful eye over whether kids have bruises. There may not be a law governing it, but then an adult can intervene sometimes. What about the spirit of protecting children where, in the case of some homeschooling, and certainly not all, and certainly maybe not causal, those kids might just disappear?
Yeah. You know, it's horrible anytime a parent or a teacher or anybody does one of these evil things. But I got to really say here, this is so significant. We're talking about controlling a private education forum, and stories are important, experience is important, but they bring out a lot of emotions. But we're talking about public policy here, Todd. And first of all, there has to be a verifiable problem. There is not a verifiable problem. I mean, for example, you know, do we know that fishermen or fisherwomen cause more forest fires? First of all, we're not even at that step with homeschooling. And it's almost as if some people want to find a problem with homeschooling, that there's a disproportionately high amount of abuse or mental psychological problems, when all of the evidence so far is just the opposite. You know, so that's where I'm having trouble with this conversation, is we're starting with the presupposition. You know, you mentioned ideology earlier. We're starting with a presupposition from somebody like Samantha, which is basically statism. The government is there to make sure bad things don't happen. That's not how we work in a free nation. And secondly, on a practical level, homeschool families are constantly engaged with other people. Now, the very tiny minority, the parents who do evil things to their children, just like public school parents who do evil things to their children, just like private school parents who do evil things to their children, they're very ingenious at doing evil and hiding it. Mm. So that's my point, is that, you know, the fact is right now, according to the U.S. Department of Justice, 5 million of today's public school students will be sexually maltreated by public school personnel before they graduate. So I'm wondering if we're putting our focus on the wrong place here.
Brian, what does your research say, if anything, about whether regulation of homeschooling, even checking in, you know, annual check-ins, or check-in from a social worker in the house can help prevent abuse or neglect?
Yeah, I'll tell you, we took the data from Samantha's organization. I personally analyzed it, their data. And I know she recognizes that she might not know everything, but we took her own data of stories of abuse, found zero correlation between the degree of state regulation of homeschooling and abuse. So when you do not even have a correlation, it is extremely difficult to argue that there's a problem. And then you'd have to go the next step, and you said this a couple times, Todd, even if there were a correlation, then you'd have to establish causation. But there's not even a correlation. So nobody has evidence of any disproportionate problem with homeschoolers. In fact, the Commission on Abuse, the U.S. Commission on Abuse, said risk factors, they do not include the type of schooling a child is in.
Samantha,
that's a national commission.
Samantha, briefly respond to Brian's research statements here.
So when he's looking at our database, what he is not highlighting is the fact that our database, by its very nature, cannot be exhaustive. We can only find the cases that are available through public records, are available through news media reports. So we're only finding ones that people have found out about. We're not seeing reports of the ones that are still going on that nobody has even laid eyes on yet. So no, you can't make definitive statements about correlation because there's not enough data. When 11 states don't even ask you to tell the state if they're homeschooling, how could you possibly collect data? And so Brian Ray is saying, we don't have enough data, but then he's arguing against even the bare minimum of asking for data.
I'm going to let you two continue to fight out the policy battles, which I know you will. And I'm glad that you're here to apprise us of some of these important issues in states across the country. We got this tweet from MP who says, since when did we decide the government needed to have control over everything in our lives? What's next? No home packed lunches for public school kids, mandated medication for ADHD, banning religious instruction in the home. Where does government control stop? Brian, I think you might agree with that sentiment. That's just a guess. But we got this message that landed in our inbox from Tiffany from Central Florida, who told us that she was homeschooled through most of high school. And it raises an interesting question about homeschooling and the lives of homeschooled kids.
I was able to join a athletics group that helped me make friends and become more social. However, growing up and now graduating college and having my own family, I find that I don't have a lot of lifelong friends that I can turn to when I need encouragement or anything else of the sort. I feel that homeschooling is really great for many families, as long as it's done correctly and you do have that social aspect as well.
Jerusha Laughlin, one of the concerns you hear a lot when it comes to homeschooling is that issue of socialization. You know, sure, kids learn to add and subtract in the second grade at school, but what they're really doing when they're in the elementary school is they're learning to socialize with other kids individually, with peer groups and with authority right. figures. So what social opportunities do you think homeschooling might cost kids, or do you think it can be made up elsewhere?
I think it can, and I think when I was homeschooled that we didn't have the co-ops and the homeschool support groups like are available now. There's a lot more options, but it is still possible for a family to become very isolated. I know the homeschool curriculum that our family was enrolled in, and nobody has a record of how many families enrolled in this program or are still how many tens of thousands of children were exposed to this particular curriculum, but they particularly said children didn't learn anything good from their peers. So we were intentionally kept in groups that were multi-age and multi-generational, so we wouldn't build close bonds with our peers. And I think that's unhealthy. I think through church and other social programs, through school teams, there are a lot more options, but that's, again, up to the parents. When your parent is your teacher, is your abuser, is your bus driver, a kid does, where are they going to, who are they going to tell if something is wrong?
And in cases where isolation is the reason for homeschooling, where the parents want the kids to be isolated, that socialization may never really be given a chance to happen in some cases. But here's an interesting message we got from Jenny in Virginia, who says, I homeschooled my two kids for 9 years. I often wish I could sign them up for a couple of classes at the school, but not have to buy in all the way. I would love to have an a la carte school system. Samantha and Brian, I both want you to talk about that briefly. Samantha, I've heard cases where homeschooled kids in the community still play on the school soccer team or football team, even if they don't take a la carte classes, that there are opportunities in some places to still be part of the school community.
Yeah, we refer to those as Tim Tebow bills because that was one of the people who took advantage of that system and, you know, became Tim Tebow.
Second-rate quarterback in the NFL. Right,
sure,
go ahead.
Go ahead. So that's an approach that we very much are interested in pursuing and seeing. Parents have access to all kinds of resources. Like my aunt, one of her children was having a really emotionally a difficult time. So for a couple of years, she did a lot of the home education at home, but she was able to continue going to school for just a couple of classes to still see her friends, but to take advantage of all of the opportunities that homeschooling has to offer. I would love to see that kind of program expanded. In Alaska, there's this wonderful opportunity for parents where if they want to, it's not required, but if they want to, there is state funding available for parents, and then they can enroll in a publicly available system that gives them access to teachers and counselors and everything. And so expanding resources, expanding tools, expanding opportunities, those are all avenues that the Coalition for Responsible Home Education is very much interested in seeing.
Brian, let me get you in very briefly before we have to go. What about the idea of a la carte? What about the idea of homeschool kids playing on sports teams and having opportunities to be part of the school community?
It's been going on for 35 years in the homeschool movement, and it begs so many questions. We had 200 years of U.S. history before schools were the norm. Nobody worried about those people's socialization. Number two, 87% of the studies on the social development of homeschool kids, these are by many researchers, not just me, 87% say they do better statistically, socially and emotionally, those in public schools. And third, we keep talking about public school activities as if they're the gold standard, Todd. Many people hated being in public schools, and people do not look to public schools as the gold standard nor their activities. Homeschool kids are in Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, T-ball, football, basketball, 4-H. They're in all of these things without the public schools. So again, we're asking the wrong question. Homeschooled and home-educated people are living life normally like adults do. They don't need to go be with 27 of their same age peers, you know, 6 hours per day to be well-socialized or well-developed, just like we adults don't do that. So we've got so many paradigm shifts here to talk about on education and institutional schooling. The fact is, in institutional schooling, many of the kids hate it. They have their own mental breakdowns, 25% dropout in some states. You know, so these are, we have the wrong questions here, but I love talking about it anyway.
Brian, thanks. I think we had a lot of the right questions, and the size of the listener response that we got suggests that the questions, many of them, this discussion, at least for our 1A listeners, was right on the money. Jerusha Laughlin, I want to single you out, and I want to thank you for suggesting this topic. It got our listeners going. It certainly got Brian and Samantha going. It got me going. Thank you for suggesting this to 1A.
You're welcome. Thank you for doing it.
That's Jerusha Laughlin. Samantha Field is a policy advocate for the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. Samantha, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian is president of the National Home Education Research Institute. Brian Ray, I hope we were on the money. Thanks for joining us.
You were on many. Thank you, Todd, and 1A. Thank you.
Well, all this month, we're going to be bringing you shows pitched by our listeners, just like Jerusha, so you can vote on them and we'll produce them here at 1A. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.